kids that come to our camp, you know, I tell them, I'm like, look, if we're in there to see you, we watch you from the second you get out of your car, the second you get back in your car. You know, we're watching how you treat your parents. We're watching what you do pregame. We're watching what you eat at the concession stand. You know, all those things, they're all important.
No good player has ever said, well, who else is going to be the shortstop? The best players just say, sign who you want. I'm going to beat him, right?
And the other thing for baseball players, if you want to be a great baseball player and play at the highest levels, then be an athlete first.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, where the coaches hang out with Walter. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Baseball Blue Book. If it has to do with baseball, it has to be in the book. The question for you, are you in the book? Now let's join our host, Walter Beattie. Hello, welcome back. We're here in Dallas, Texas at the ABCA convention, and I want to welcome our next guest from the West Coast, Servite High School, University of Arizona, now TCU pitching coach, Dave Lawn. Lonnie, thank you so much for joining us
today. Having me.
This is great now that you and I get to meet face-to-face for the first time.
I know.
And I really cannot emphasize this enough. As a parent of a pitcher and working with a lot of pitchers, Dave Lawn's one of the premier pitching coaches in the country. And so when he talks, I listen because I like to learn, so things that I can share. But the one thing about you, Lonnie, is your enthusiasm for the sport as well as the craft of pitching. So I want to answer a few questions that got submitted from some parents with regard to pitching. Okay, if we're recruiting a pitcher, where does height factor in with regard to either right-handers or left-handers when you're recruiting high school pitchers?
I mean, I think slightly built. You know, I think if you're a 5'9" beanpole, you know, that might give us some answers in terms of what your ceiling is or isn't. And then if you're a 5'9" stocky guy like we had at U of A last year, Tony Pluta, that gives us an idea. I mean, good is good.
Right.
I mean, really, it is.
Right.
Good is good. You know, when you have access to certain, you know, data and stuff, you know, I mean, there's the guys in the big leagues aren't as tall as they say they are.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of little guys out there. I mean, it's baseball. Height doesn't matter, but the physicality does.
Okay, so the physicality, and talk a little bit about physicality. When I try to explain to parents about the role strength/physicality mm-hmm. play, particularly at the high school level, would you agree that it's a worthwhile endeavor for a high school student athlete to familiarize themselves or have a routine within the weight room prior to their arrival in college?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had a coach's clinic at TCU a couple of days ago, and our strength coach, Zach Dakin, spoke. And I didn't know this, but in baseball players in particular, the most common injury is a pars fracture, which is a micro fracture in one of the vertebrae, and it's because it's rotational. And it's increased dramatically because people are training the rotation a lot more than they used to.
Right.
Instead of, you know, the natural rotation of maybe, say, playing football and basketball, baseball.
Right.
All in one year and that sort of thing. So I think functional strength, where it's applicable to baseball, is more important than anything. Excuse me. I think also having some consistency in what you're doing, the idea that you're 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, and you're going to take a long period of time off to train and that sort of thing, that's not what they need. They need they need to play and they need to compete and whatever strength thing they're doing, they need to align themselves with somebody that knows what they're doing, because you put some kid in a squat rack and you're not teaching them how to do it properly, guys are going to get banged up and get hurt.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about the buzzwords of velocity versus pitchability. Mm-hmm. I find a lot of young pitchers chasing numbers as opposed to learning the craft of pitching. Can you speak to that a little bit about maybe from the age of, say, 14 or older, with regard to understanding where to throw the ball, when, what pitch to throw, and what count, and so forth. So velocity versus pitchability.
Well, I mean, velocity is going to catch anybody's attention.
Right.
This isn't an original line. I stole it from somebody, but nobody cares how hard you throw a ball for. And I don't care what anybody says. That's facts.
Right.
Now, and I love that there's people out there that are making us better coaches by being pioneers with the use of this, of all this technology.
Right.
I said that when we spoke last spring. But nobody wants to account for puberty.
Amen. Really? So big. And that is a big deal. Mother Nature, right?
Mother Nature is going to play a big role. I think there is a point in time where, we'll put it this way, our strength coach isn't going to put a young guy in a squat rack and load the spine up until he teaches them how to properly
move the weight.
Move the weight. I think we get caught in the chicken before the egg or the egg before the chicken when it comes to velo pitchability. I don't dispute that if you're four pitch Joe College right-hander who's throwing 88, you're not going to get maybe as many opportunities as the guy who's throwing 98 or 95. The fact of the matter is 88 with a 3-4 pitch mix and holding runners and fielding their position and doing all that, you can be an All-American and help your team win there as well, which there's nothing to be ashamed of for that. But the grip and rip and like you're knocking over milk bottles at the state fair to win the big animal.
I love that one. I'm stealing that one.
There are some guys that can pitch at a high level and do that, but I think these are guys that are much older.
Right.
Learn to move the ball around with your fastball. Learn another pitch that you can throw at will for a strike, and then try to learn a third pitch that you can do the same. We're so enamored with the velo, the movement, the this and the that. And it's not to say that's not something that is being focused on at the facilities that are training guys, but it is the only thing for them. Well, I mean, we want it all.
Right.
We want stuff. We want depth in the breaking ball. We want ride on the fastball. We want a guy that gets the ball to the catcher to control the running game in a decent time. We want guys to get off the mound and make plays on defense. We want awesome competitors, awesome workers. They got to do well in the classroom because never seen a guy underachieve in school and overachieve on the field.
Right. Right.
Doesn't never happen.
Right.
Nobody's broke that cheat code.
Right.
Nobody has that cheat code. So I think,
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with just going out there and being a good baseball player. And then as time goes on and your body's ready and can withstand the ground force that you're putting in to run that ball up there into the mid-90s, well, then that's when you do it.
Right.
It isn't just – you can't even fill the lower bowl of Yankee Stadium with everybody who's played Major League Baseball.
That's right. Right.
So I mean, what's the goal? Is the goal to just be a pro? Is the goal to be a major leaguer? Or is the goal to just be the best you can as a baseball player? And that's the business I'm in, trying to make guys better.
Well, and so on that note, when a student athlete shows up and you're coaching them for the first time, their freshman year, what pitch selection are you working more? Changeup? Are you working more breaking ball? I know they call this cutter. I call it a cutter. Everybody calls it a sweeper. What's the secondary of choice that you think young pitchers should learn to command and throw in any count?
Well, you know, I think you first got to identify their strengths, which we have a pretty good idea of, because after all, we recruited them and spent time and looked at them and all that. I just heard John Savage say something in his talk this morning, and it really resonated. I mean, John's one of my best friends in baseball. I mean, we talk baseball all the time. I've never heard him say this, but he and now us, we're gonna try and get away from categorizing a pitch, your best pitch, your second best pitcher. Let's try to get three number one.
Right. Oh, okay. I like that. You know, yeah.
And when he said that, that really made sense. But to answer your question, the changeup typically is the pitch that they is their pitch that they least feel good about when they get to us.
Right.
It's absolutely the most critical pitch to develop at the collegiate level. And so we're spending a lot of time on the changeup right away. And, you know, and sometimes it takes a while.
Right.
You know, so it does, because it kind of, first of all, you got to hold it in a way that you've never held a baseball.
Right, right.
So that's going to give some uneasiness. And what we teach them in regards to the changeup is fast arm on the plate under the glove every single time. And when they like the fast arm, they can, you know, that clicks, right? You want it to look like you're throwing a fastball, but it's 10, 12, however many, how slower. Okay, on the plate, that makes sense, because you got to throw a first strike.
Right.
But the under the glove part, they have trouble with, because to them, that's a ball.
Right.
Until we pull up, and this is, again, the greatness of technology, we pull up every single swing and miss changeup that TCU threw last year.
Yeah.
And 90% of them are on the plate and under the glove. They're balls. And then you go and I saw on the Pitching Ninja.
Yep.
He posted somebody's changeups, like 102 seconds of, I think it was Trevor Hoffman's changeup. Same thing. They were on the plate and they were under the glove. Technically, they're a ball.
Right.
But if you can get them to check those three boxes, they can't not swing at it.
I love the under the glove. I'm just visualizing that.
And the other thing, now, the only time I don't think it's a great pitch is because that is the one count statistically has shown us they don't, they for some reason take it.
Right.
But as soon as it starts getting into the at bat, you know, the pitcher always, you know, there's some tension and some anxiety as the at bat goes up. Well, same with him.
Right. Exactly. More so with him.
And a lot more things are going through his head as the at bat goes.
Right.
It's one thing. We're trying to put it here, trying to put it there, we're trying to put it here, you know. And so, yeah, the change. Now, the breaking balls, you know, one breaking ball, two breaking balls, three, you know, I'm not so concerned with that, provided they're different.
East-West, you're talking about, like?
They're just different.
Right.
That's what the great thing about technology is.
Right.
Because now we can say, hey, look, you like your curve. you love your slide. But your curveball, which you just kind of think is okay, is actually better than you think.
Right. So technology actually allows
yeah.
you to say, you know, you here think this pitch is better, but it's actually this pitch.
So I'm not going to tell you where to throw your slider away.
Right.
But you need to understand that not only do you command your curve back, so it's in the zone.
Right.
You get more swing and misses. You get more chase with it. And the exit velo on contact is lower. So if you were me, what would you do?
Right, exactly correct.
You know,
the numbers don't lie.
So now we can keep working on your slider. We could try to get it better. But there's a case where there's just one's better than the other, or they're very similar. That's what technology shows us. You know, when you get TrackMan and you're doing a bullpen and he's, you know, that the heat map, it, you know, those two pitches are in the same place on the same plane. One's just spinning like this and the other one's spinning like that.
Right.
To them, it's the same thing.
So I want to ask on that same kind of a topic, you know, as a high school, you were coaching at an elite high school, in California. How do you prepare high school athletes for fall college baseball? In other words, it has a whole, it's meaningful, it's significant, and it's intense. Where most high school athletes across the country, it's kind of an optional fall or a scout kind of weekend thing. But in college, you're going 6 days a week, and it's highly competitive. So how do you prepare those pitchers when they're coming into TCU?
Well, the thing you have to be mindful of as the coach, there's two key things. It's an extraordinary, it's the longest day. Their days are so much longer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So we're lifting at 6 a.m, which means they're getting up at
5:30. Right.
Which means after the lift, they're going to go eat.
Right.
And then they got a shower. And then they're in class from 8 or 9 o'clock till 1 o'clock, let's say, or 2. Then they're on the field for another 2, 3, 4 hours. And they've already been up for 12 hours.
Right.
And they've got homework to get to, and they've got a life to get to.
Right.
And so there's this. That's what they don't understand. It's a long day. You're like your parents.
Right. It's 6 days a week of that.
And the other thing for whether it's pitcher or hitter, it's for the pitcher, they find out real quick that the hitter doesn't swing at everything.
Better eye.
Not swinging at everything. And the hitter's finding out that it's not the pitches I'm swinging at that matter. It's the ones I don't swing at that matter.
Right.
Because whether it's a fall game or the purple and gray World Series or it's us and the University of whoever, it's a lot different mentality. We're not just, hey, let's just play a little 7-inning fall game.
Right.
You know, it's guys who are 4 or 5 years older than you.
Which is a big deal.
You know, and they're now adjusting to a guy who Luke Voyers, one of our starting outfielders, has thousands of plate appearances
right.
at this level.
Right.
So he's seen below. He's seen a good breaking ball. He's seen a bad breaking ball. He knows if you can't throw the breaking ball.
Right.
So now he knows that all I'm going to do is sit on a fastball.
Right.
And so on and so on. And, you know, you get a young guy comes in and it's 2-0 count. You're not getting a heater, dude.
Right.
You don't get a heater.
Right.
We're going to throw a slider. So we'll even throw a change. And if it is a heater, it's pretty angry and it's got some fur on it and it's going to rip your face off if you're not ready to hit it. Exactly. So everything kind of speeds up, but whether they're a pitcher or a hitter, the day is so long.
And to me, I don't think we prepare at the youth level. We don't really prepare. You know, we talk of the destination. We talk recruiting. We talk about, you know, going in front of scouts and camps. But when they actually land on a campus, they find that college baseball is intense from day one until the end of the season. There's no ramp up necessary.
Well, you have and you know, you have a bunch of motivated, highly motivated,
highly competitive,
very competitive. You know, we're not just doing three sets of five in the weight room. Right. There's always some sort of competition there. At TCU, we actually keep the win-loss record of any time we pick teams or they pick teams. So you get a guy like Peyton Chatney, who came to us from Ole Miss. The teams he was on this past fall lost once. And he's still mad about it. And this is a guy, he's won a World Series.
Right.
This is his fifth fall.
Right.
Fourth fall. And he's mad that at the end of the fall, after all the competitions, whatever it was, 27 outs, a bunt defense, a game, an inter squad, whatever it is, you know, he's 18-1. And he's mad because
not worried about the 18, right?
The board every single day.
But that's the epitome, though, at the level of which you coach, is you need that type of temperament. You need to have that competitive fire to be able to participate, because if not, you're going to get swept to the side.
Yeah.
There's too many competitors in your locker room. What has it been like for you to go from the West Coast, call it the Pac-12 mentality, mm-hmm. to now we're in the Big 12 and we're in Texas, and you got UT and Texas Tech and all that, Oklahoma?
Yeah, you know, you know, out west, you have Arizona State. You have SC, UCLA, Fullerton, Long Beach, Stanford, Cal,
Oregon State,
and so on.
Right.
Here, it's like everybody against everybody.
Everybody. Legitimately.
I mean, it's like it's a rival game every game.
Right.
Now, haven't experienced it yet, just from what, you know, everybody hates everybody and vice versa. And so there's no, oh, this is a big, they're all big from the fan base standpoint.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's a lot of care
yes.
at TCU when you guys are playing anybody that's in a different color uniform.
Exactly. Now, I'm not saying that isn't the case for the players. For the players, it's always that.
Right.
But for the fan bases, it's a little different. It's, you know, the fans. And you know, out west, Arizona does really well.
Right.
Attendance-wise. Oregon State,
right.
Really, really well. Again, Fullerton, Long Beach, relatively speaking,
right.
are, you know, doing really well. I mean, I was looking at something on Twitter about the attendance. I mean, TCU averages 5.
Right.
Averages.
Right.
Right. And then, of course, we know the other schools are even more.
Right.
So that part is that's different. One of the things, I guess, the advantage of doing this for now the 38th season is I've kind of been almost everywhere, so it's not such a shock.
38 years.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a lifetime in the game today.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen so much.
I've seen a lot. Still seeing new stuff, too, which is cool.
Which is why I love coming to the ABCA. I always see something or hear something, very much like you talked about John Savage. I mean, I always pick up Clint Hurdle throughout this line at me the other day, and which I was talking technology, and he said, you know, Walt, they still haven't invented a piece of technology that can measure nuts and guts.
Yeah.
I'm using that for the rest. As long as I'm breathing, I'm using that line.
I mean, it is true, and you know, there's it's almost like politics now.
Right. It is.
It's either none. I mean, there's got to be a way. And I think things are working towards that way. But you know, it's just not there yet.
Right.
And the kids are the ones that are not only benefiting from all this, but they're also getting hurt by it, because the actual playing the game part, I don't care what anybody says, is what we're spending more time now than ever teaching. And because it's just not, it's more training based, it's more, you know, how far can I hit it? How hard off the bat is it? You know, what is the pitch doing? As opposed, you know, there's too many kids making technology their master.
Right.
Their servant.
Boy, oh boy.
Now that's
a good one. Oh my goodness.
From the Texas.
Texas baseball ranch.
Yeah, I got that from him. And that to me says it all.
Wow, I love that.
And I think when we get to that point, or when you teach it that way, I think then, you know, now you got the best move.
I think it's really from your, I know that you are a coach and you are not an instructor. And I try to explain to parents, some people instruct and they are on a board and they point and they get numbers and we get, you're a coach. You're talking about the person, the mindset, the body, the movements, you know, the thought processes. And there is what I think needs to be more of, a little bit more coaching versus being an instructor.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, you know, it if I don't play the middle, then I sound like a jackwagon or a dinosaur.
Right.
I get reminded every day how old I am by John and TJ and right. Kirk. But, I mean, we just got to come to some common ground on this, because yes, they're stronger than ever. Yes, they throw harder than ever. Yes, they do all this stuff way more than they've ever done it before. But we're injured more than ever.
That's right.
The skill, the nuance, the baseball clock in their head is worse than ever. And that's not debatable.
Right.
That is not debatable. You know, so I, you know, maybe, you know, hopefully we get there before they start shoveling dirt on me, but, you know.
I say that all the time. I want to live to see the game come back to the competitive, instinctual, you know, gamesmanship. And I call it the Tony La Russa, you know, that old kind of management of a game, as opposed to pushing buttons and checking stats. Yeah. And checking sheets.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, like, I'm old enough to have seen Willie Mays play. I'm old enough to have seen Hank Aaron play, Frank Robinson. I'm also old enough to have seen Mike Trout and Miguel Cabrera and all the really good players. And those guys rack up the numbers they rack up because when it's second and third and one out, they don't worry about exit velocity or launch angle. They go second and third, one out, you're going to pitch me away.
I'm driving it backside.
I'm just going to go flip it over the second baseman's right. head and get paid.
Right. And oh, by the way, Hank Aaron could hit off his front foot and just flick it over the second baseman's head. You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, to the people out there, quit tearing everybody. You know, we're all trying to,
right.
we're all trying to make this game as good as it can be, but the blueprint hasn't changed.
No. The foundation is still the same.
Wally Kincaid, the legendary Cerritos College coach.
Right. I know really Dave. Well through Dave. Yeah.
And, you know, it's throw strikes, play catch, put the ball in play.
I remember George Horton saying a great line. He said, those who play catch the best win games. You just think
when,
about it.
When we play a team we've never seen and I'm watching them play catch and warm up, I know they're a good team.
Right.
Or I know that
In fact, a lot of old school scouts will say to me, I can go watch a kid get off the bus, put his spikes on. I watch how he plays catch, and that'll tell me what I'm going to see.
Yeah.
And good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah. Well, I love to watch when we go to see a pitcher. I want to see his warm-up and his routine and what he's doing and how he's prepping. And, you know, because I'm there because I've heard he's got stuff.
Right.
I don't even need the gun.
Right.
I can just sit behind home plate, and if I want to see something, I can snake eye somebody else's radar gun reading. But I want to see, what's his face look like? Is he a competitor? How does teammates, what's his body language? What's his demeanor? You know, all those kinds of things. And Kelly,
Well, I want to say thank you because I know I caught you last minute. You were kind enough to share some time with me today, and I really want to wish you nothing but success.
Yeah, thank you.
In your Horned Frog debut in 2024.
Yeah, February 16th.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to actually catch my first games this year. Going down to, is it Houston that you guys are playing in March? The tournament I'm coming down with.
No, actually, week three. We are at Globe.
Yeah, that's where I'll be. Yeah.
We play SC and ASU.
Yeah, I'll be there for that. I'll be down there for that. And I can't wait for that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's
gonna be. For me, back home is nothing but snow, so I can't wait to get down into the warmer weather. But, Lonnie, thank you so much.
Great.
I appreciate it.
Great
pleasure.
To meet you.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Blast Motion, you got to get this guy a Blast Motion visor.
I want them to hear that.